Okay, if you remember, the number one goal of the book of Matthew is to try to give us confidence in Jesus' claim as to who he is. If we finish studying the book of Matthew and we have greater confidence in Jesus being who he claimed he is, we have succeeded in understanding the purpose of the author. It isn't to gain fun facts or to just be knowledgeable. It's to have enough confidence in Jesus to live your life as a follower of him. Even when it's hard, even when it means that you will die for your faith, that's the kind of confidence that the book is meant to build in us. It's so easy for us who have been Christians for so long for our confidence to fade. We believe it. We think we know it. I don't know how many people have said to me, I believe all that, but they don't believe it enough to live it full time. To kind of let it slide and just, I don't really want to share my faith with the guys at work because they're going to think it's stupid or whatever. The Bible says clearly that the truth of Jesus is foolishness. It's a stumbling block to people who don't believe. So it's not surprising that it can seem that way to us. We are in chapter 25. Jesus continuing to answer the question, those questions asked earlier in chapter 24, what is the sign of your coming? Chapter 4 ended with the parable of the wise servant and the evil unwise servant, if you remember it. And then with the harsh discourse of verse 51. Remember we said that the wise servant anticipated his coming? The evil servant lost focus and believed he never would come. The master returned in verse 50 and found him faithless. He uses the example of the Eastern kings would do to a servant, a trusted follower who broke faith with him. For his duplicitous acts and his hypocrisy, in other words, claiming loyalty to one and then following another, he was cut in two as an example of his treachery. So that's where that verse comes from. But now we move on to a different parable in verse 25. I want to remind you the purpose of a parable, because the purpose of a parable can drift from us. A parable is a metaphor. It is often signaled by the first line in verse in chapter 25. The kingdom of heaven shall be likened. In other words, this is like that. That is going to be a parable. It is not an allegory. If you make it into an allegory, you are going to try to assign meaning to every part of the story. You're going to have to find, in this case, a meaning for the oil, a meaning for the virgins, a meaning for the lamp, a meaning for the process. And pretty soon you begin to spiritualize way beyond the point of the parable. I don't suppose there's anything wrong with gaining a few applications from a parable that go beyond the scope of it. But the scope of, if you miss the scope or the main point of the parable by trying to allegorize it, you've missed the point that the author brought it in to the text for. So don't try to create too many allegories. As I looked at various people's opinions on this parable, it was amazing how deep some of the allegorical applications can be, and yet they missed the very simple purpose of the parable. And we don't want to miss the point. If you remember, we said that often the rhetorical device used in Middle Eastern writing brought the main point of the parable, the main point of the paragraph, to the middle of the content rather than the end. Remember, we said the Greek mind, which we descend from, gives you an introduction, a body of content, and a conclusion. And that's the way we think that every argument is. But the Middle Eastern mind often used a different rhetorical device where they brought the chief argument in the middle. So if in advance you look at this first parable and you look at verse 6, that is the point of the parable. The bridegroom is coming. That is the main point that he wants you to know. And it's sort of fitting because if you looked at the last parable, that was the main point of that as well. The king is coming back. Okay, that was the main point. He's coming back. It may be a while, but that's the main point. So we want to make sure that we're getting at least the main point out of it. And then if you choose to add a few things more, you can. Notice he says here, and we're going to I'm going to read this whole thing through, and then we'll talk about the parts. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 maidens who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight, a cry was heard. Behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him. Then all those maidens arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you. But go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. And afterwards the other maidens came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, surely I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you neither know the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. Okay, a couple of things just to notice as a foundation. Number one, it doesn't say that these are good and bad. It doesn't say that they're good and bad maidens. It just says that some are wise and some are foolish. Some were careful and some were not. Also, I want to make sure that you understand that there's a hint here, at least, maybe if not a bold statement, there's a hint that the bridegroom isn't coming as fast as the disciples think he's coming. Does that make sense? They certainly think he's coming within their lifetime, especially when he referred to the fall of the temple will happen while you're there. They think it's all going to happen during, and it's not. He's in the other one and this one, he's giving them the idea, the hint that this is going to be a long time in coming. Wise servants, wise maidens anticipated the delay, but the foolish ones did not. Notice that they both slumbered, right? It says the wise and the servant both slumbered. If you were to write it, we would say, well, the wise ones stayed awake the whole time and the others were sluggards and they slept. But see, that's not the point. There are a lot of points to examine. But once again, the main point I want you to get, behold, the bridegroom is coming. Okay, now let's look at what a wedding looks like in the Middle East, because this is a Middle Eastern wedding. Anybody see Fiddler in the Roof ever? You watch that? Kind of like that thing when the guy's always talking with God on the side, you know. My favorite quote, and I never say it right, but I'll do it anyway, just so you guys can mock me. They say money is a sickness, you know. May I be smitten so that I never recover, you know. But I just like the way he argues with God. In fact, the Jews take a lot of pride in that they're a nation who can argue with God. Most people don't argue with their God. Go back and forth and just tell him how you feel, even if it's irreverent. You know, God allows that with us, with his children. So in those days, a marriage was arranged. If you watch Fiddler of the Roof, you know, there was a matchmaker and they were arranged. You didn't really get to fall in love, but hopefully it was somebody that wasn't too terrible that you had to marry and somebody that you may actually liked, and some of these things were settled, but we'll get past that. And all the details are worked out, the bride price and all those things are taken care of in advance. And then comes the day of the wedding. The day of the wedding, there is one detail left to be ironed out. And it is an important detail. Everybody knows that the wedding's happening. That all the provisions are made. All the bridesmaids are ready. The bridegroom is ready. But now the bride's father has to go to the bridegroom's house. Would you move that bag for me on the floor? Thank you. It's sitting there doing this because of that fan up there. And it makes me think it's going to do something to me. So thank you. Anyway, it's breathing. There's something in there. A cat. No. Sorry. Back to the point here. We are having... he goes to the point and he has to settle on one last detail. Now remember when we talked about divorce earlier, divorce was easy. If you didn't like her, she wasn't pretty enough, she burned supper, she sassed you, whatever, you could just give her back. Okay? Well, a wife couldn't just be divorced because a woman in those days couldn't live on her own. It wasn't possible to make ends meet on your own. So the father had to take her back. So before the wedding occurred, this price, how much money the father would get back with the daughter, if he got the daughter back, had to be settled. And it was sometimes a long time in coming. So they're trying to decide what that cost is going to be. Once the price was settled, then after some manly toasting, we'll call it, the bridegroom would then go with his group to the house of the bride, take the bride, and the bridesmaids would make it a nice procession all through the town. And everyone would then go to the place of the wedding, which was often the bridegroom's house, or if it wasn't big enough, it could be a hall or somebody else's house who had a bigger home. And they would go there, and then the wedding would proceed. And also much more manly toasting. So this was kind of what they did. They had a good time. So now when it says lamps, it says their lamps. It says they took their lamps. You have to understand that the translation here isn't really a very good translation, because they're not really lamps. They're more like torches, you know. You see them with the stick with the little flammable stuff on the end. And this is what they would carry through the streets and to lead them to that place. In this parable, the bridegroom was delayed a long time. Remember, their days are, you know, like 6 p.m., you know, that's the end of the, you know, we're drawing to a close. So you probably expect them to show up at 7 or 8 or something in there, sometime earlier in the evening. And they're not coming. They're not showing up. So the dickering must not be going very well over what either the father of the bride wants a whole lot of money if you bring her back, or the groom doesn't want to pay a whole lot of money if he brings her back. However, that regardless, it's delayed. And if you remember, the very first verse says the kingdom of heaven is like this. So he's drawing a comparison between this delayed groom coming for the bride and him coming back for his followers. So obviously, since he used one parable already, he's using this parable, and we're going to be followed with one more on the same topic. He's doing more than hinting that it's going to be a while before I come back. And because remember, in that culture, if you want to communicate well, you communicate in a story. You don't give an introduction, content, and a conclusion. You use a story because hey, buddy. Hey, there are priorities, you know. So, I gave an invitation and they ran to the front. So, I'm sorry. I had some super strong decaffeinated tea, or caffeinated tea before. I think that must be it, because I don't drink coffee. So, anyway, or either that's because it's so cold this morning. I'm still thinking about what happened to Alaskan warming. But anyway, back to the point before the Pentecostals ran up to the front here. So the kingdom of heaven is like that. These are comparative, and they should be aware that he's going to be delayed. And this story stays so long. Can you imagine? You're the bride, and you know that your wedding is contingent on this last piece of agreement. And hour after hour goes by, and you are so excited, because this isn't like, you know, in our culture, you know, now that you can't marry until you're 35 or something. I don't know how this works now, but you know, in those days, you married young, right? And so these are teenagers. These are 10 teenage girls, bridesmaid, and the bride is probably a teenager, and they're excited. Now, on your wedding night, you picture them like, oh, he's 5 minutes late, so let's take a nap. Is that the way it's going to work? No. They're really, really excited about this whole thing. But it's not happening. And hour after hour after hour goes by, and the bridegroom doesn't show up. Torches begin to grow quite weary. And pretty soon, they're sure the dickering isn't going well, and I'm sure she's stricken with the idea, is this even going to happen at all? Remember, the kingdom of heaven is like this. He will be delayed. He will be a while. So they gave up, and it says they went to sleep. It doesn't say just some of them went to sleep. It says all of them went to sleep. They all slumbered and slept. They must have concluded he isn't coming. He's just not coming. What's going on? Now, it's interesting to note there, when it says they took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom, this could confuse you a little bit if you're looking at it, because you assume, it seems like they've already started their trip, right? They went out to meet the bridegroom. Well, if you follow that logic, that means partway there they fell asleep along the roadside or something, because it said they all slept, which is not very logical. So if you look back, they aren't halfway there. The phrase, or the word went out, is a verb. In the Greek, and I don't do this very often to you, I apologize in advance, but it's in the aorist tense. It is a verb that is considered without regard for past, present, or future. In other words, there is no English equivalent in English for this Greek word. In general, it is rendered by translators as the past tense. But in this sense, it gives us a disservice, because you think that they've already left, and they haven't. It's most likely better rendered that they were preparing to go out. It's going to be the future tense application of this rather than the past tense. So they are ready to go out to meet him, but he didn't come. The wise anticipated a longer wait. The unwise, not so much. Their torches had burned down to around to where they weren't very good torches anymore. I don't know how many of you have had torches or the oil lamp where eventually that gets all carbonated on the end and you trim it. And in the old days when they used candles, they would trim them so they would burn better. You have to cut away the old and then you re-soak it with oil so that it will burn nicely when the time comes. And then at midnight came the call. The bridegroom is coming. And I don't know if you would imagine the emotional ups and downs of the bride and the party as well, that they had been so excited. It had been the night, obviously, of a lifetime. And all of a sudden, it became quite depressing. A lot of questions went through the mind of those waiting. Is this ever really going to happen? But when that call came, the bridegroom is coming, go out to meet him. They rose and trimmed their lamps. The wise maidens had additional oil to re-soak their torches and light them. The unwise had none. They had not the vision to know he was coming in his own time. And that is the mistake that we all can make if we're not careful. Enough time passes that we start to wonder, is he really coming? The message here is not that you are to be ready. That is the allegorical application of this. And I'll explain why that's not the important message to take from it. Certainly you can look at this story and determine whether or not you are presently are wise or unwise concerning the return of God for his chosen people. But if all you do is look at yourself and decide whether you are wise or unwise, you've missed the point. We said earlier, the whole point is that he is coming back. Jesus is trying to compare that which his followers knew. And they knew about a wedding, and they knew how that would work, and they knew what the expectations would be, and they knew what the disappointments would be, and they knew what the challenge of waiting for his return would be. As the bridegroom comes for the bride, he will return for his followers as well. They are to be confident. The parable that he told them brought a comparison to between their own personal experiences and the knowledge in their minds and hearts that he was trying to build great confidence in them. The danger of making it an allegory and saying it's all about me being ready is it focuses on me. It focuses on the person waiting. But if you look at the parable it was meant to be, which is focusing on the bridegroom is coming, the focus is on God. Remember, the purpose of a parable leaves God always as the hero, not us. It's not that, hey, we are wise, we are ready. The purpose is that he is coming back, and we look to God. We look to God to fulfill his promise to them. The disciples are already deeply disappointed. They expected an earthly kingdom while they walked the earth, while Jesus walked the earth. And now they're being told that he's going to leave and be gone, and their entire culture is going to be destroyed. That's pretty disturbing. And now he's trying to stretch them even further and saying, not only is it going to be not as quick as you think now that you're sort of willing to accept that the temple's going to be destroyed, it's not going to be even as quick as you think it's going to be, that it's going to be within your lifetime. It may be a long time. In the silent years, or what we call the silent years between Malachi and Matthew, there are 400 years there. That was a lot longer silent years than they thought it was going to be. God is doing what he does, and he's bringing to an end of history in his time. We know better than the disciples how long it's going to be, because we look back at the 2,000 years and say, that's been quite a while. Don't you think it's about time now, bridegroom, to come back? And yet at the same time, not one of us, I don't think, in this room would urge God to come back before his time was right for him to come back. He has a purpose, and he is very persistent in pursuing his purpose. But if we take the main point of the parable, it is that he is coming back, and we can take great confidence in that. So we've been through two parables. Next, we will look at the third. If you want to read in advance, it's the parable of the talents. And just to let you know that the talent isn't talent, the parable of the people with musical ability, that's not that, right? And it's not money either. That's not the purpose of what to do with your money. How to be faithful with your money is not the purpose. If we're going to stay within the context, guess what the purpose is going to be? He's coming back. And it's all about God coming back. If we allegorize, we take a tremendous amount of many lessons from these. And I suppose I would say, go ahead and do that if you got the major point. But if you don't got the major point, don't do that. Because it's important to do the major point. I mean, I'm not a physical therapist, but we have a couple here amongst us. And they may give us a tiny little thing to do toward some sort of major goal. The goal in giving me the minor thing to do that I look at is that, hey, I did this, I was good. That, if that's all I got out of it, that wasn't any good, because there was a bigger goal in mind. That little part helped me to achieve something greater. These little things, these little stories, these little things that he's giving us insight into, or help us to have great confidence that he's coming back. And see, if I could measure, if I was God here and I could look at you and say, okay, how confident are you of Jesus is who he said he is and that he's coming back, and give you each a number, you know, you're at 53%, you're at 78%, you know, what percentage would you have to have before you are confident enough to share that news with others? Or are we so tenuous in our confidence that Jesus is coming back that we believe it ourselves, but we certainly aren't going to share it because, man, that's just way too heavy to try to defend. It's a challenge. It's a challenge to have confidence in that knowledge of God. And he knew that was going to be a challenge, and that's why he is giving us these parables. So let's close in prayer. Lord, we thank you for the Bible and the insight into your view of the challenges that we will face. Help us have confidence in you and confidence that you are coming back for us and going to fulfill the promise that you have made to us. We ask this in Jesus' name, amen.